We're going to call to order the meeting. This is the Judiciary Finance and Policy Committee. Just so folks are aware, there may be one of two ways we proceed today. We usually have a 24-hour rule in this committee for amendments, but we are currently working on an amendment that may not be objectionable. And if we can figure that out between now and the end of the committee hearing, we may vote on this bill. If we can't, there is the potential that we'll lay the bill over, the amendments will be drafted, and then we will take the bill up for voting on amendments on Tuesday. So currently there's an amendment being drafted, and we'll just see what happens as we proceed with testimony. So the only bill on the agenda for today is Representative Moline's bill, House File 2576. And that bill, Representative Moline moves that House File 2576 be passed and re-referred to the Public Safety Policy and Finance Committee. And Representative Moline, I believe you have two amendments to get the bill in the shape that you would like it. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I have the A14 amendment, A14-0813 amendment, and the A14-0812 amendment. I'd like to move the 0813 amendment first.
Representative Moline moves the A14-0813 amendment to get the bill in the shape that she would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I have the 0812 amendment that I would like to move. There is somebody that would like to testify just to this amendment. I don't know if you want that now or after it's added to the bill.
Representative Moline, why don't we bring them up, let them tell us a little bit about their position on it before we adopt it. So okay. Welcome to the committee. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on labor issues. I'd like to thank you for having me here today, and I'd like to thank Representative Moline for introducing this amendment. We worked on these issues with some of the proponents last year with Ban the Box. We think on the expungement issue, though, that making sure that issues don't arise if there's a negligent hiring lawsuit, that this helps prevent some of those things. And I know part of the goal is to make sure that people are employable after these, and we think that this addresses some of the concerns, or most of the concerns, from the business community, and we appreciate your adoption of this amendment. And thank you, Representative Moline.
Questions from the representative from the Chamber of Commerce? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, a question I have. I think it's a good idea to give some like protections for these people. The question I would have is, would those same protections being enforced if the record was expunged, but there is information that the employer or the landlord or the representatives of the landlord knew about an incident that had been expunged and it still moves forward? Because he knew about that information and didn't act on it, would he end up being liable in that case?
Mr. Gerber? Representative Moline.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that I understand that question. I think that's what the amendment is addressing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ms.
All.
Okay. Maybe.
Mr. Gerber.
Madam Chair, I think I understand that you're asking if the employer knew of information and hired somebody, then could that information still be used? I think the amendment is addressing that information in a civil lawsuit could not be introduced as evidence of the employees or former employees' criminal activities if they've been expunged. So I think that provides the protection that we're looking for in this case.
Other questions? All right. Representative Moline moves adoption of the A14-0812 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Moline, to your bill.
Madam Chair, I actually have an oral amendment as well. There's a technical error in the bill that was brought to my attention by House Counsel.
Representative Moline.
Page 3, line 7. Delete the words subject to.
So leave the parens A?
No, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So it'd be page 3, lines 7 and 8. Delete the new language, the paren A, subject to, paragraph paren C. That was a reference to a part of the bill that's no longer there.
Representative Moline, it's my understanding that you need to keep the A in parens.
Okay. So just the subject to paragraph C.
Questions from members? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. To your bill, Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And we're here today with a, I think, comprehensive expungement bill before us. Madam Chair, as you know, you were the chair of a joint expungement working group that we met several times over the summer and fall. It was a joint effort between the House and the Senate with members from both caucuses present, and we worked towards reforming some of our expungement laws. It's kind of come after years of public pressure and, of course, hearing from our own constituents who've had difficulties obtaining or keeping employment because of a criminal past, or even getting housing because of a criminal past, and some even having trouble getting into college because of a criminal past, whether it's juvenile or adult, sometimes arrests that don't result in conviction. And we also had some recent Minnesota Supreme Court cases which put a lot of pressure on the legislature and really put the ball in our court and said that we need to do something as far as these expungement laws go, because the court really limited themselves in the records that they could expunge. So we came together as a House and Senate bipartisan group and worked towards a resolution, and this is part of that. And so I bring it here today, members, and I have Mark Hawsey here from the Council on Crime and Justice to present the bill.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Hawsey, and I'm Vice President of the Council on Crime and Justice. So I'm going to do the walkthrough of the bill, starting with Section 1. Section 1 amends the current juvenile records expungement statute to respond to one of the court cases Representative Moline mentioned. It's relating to juvenile records expungement. The current statute says that the, and because it's a statute, it allows the courts to seal executive branch records as well. The current statute says that a record of adjudication may be sealed, and the Supreme Court recently interpreted that mean to adjust the record of the adjudication. So the petition for adjudication, other records that can cause juveniles problems as they move forward, would not be sealed. So this language makes it clear that those records could be sealed as well. In addition, the standard to be applied by the court in juvenile delinquency expungement has been more clearly delineated, and a list of factors to be considered is included. Additionally, this makes it clear that those juvenile records that have been expunged have the same rules of access to those expunged records that currently apply to, actually, as this law is amended, will apply to adult criminal records. In other words, it'll be clear that law enforcement prosecutors, Department of Human Services, have the same access to these juvenile expunged records as they currently do to do for adult convictions, adult records. Should I just proceed through the sections, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative, or Mr. Hawsey, please.
Section 2 addresses the issue that sometimes you hear that, well, you know, expungement is just the sealing of the government records. What about the records that are out there that are collected by data harvest companies, which are in the law called business screening services? What happens with their records? And under federal law, they're supposed to notify, if they check the government record and it's been expunged, they're supposed to update their records. This just really clarifies that for under state law, that if a business screening service discovers that a record's been expunged, they're supposed to remove it from their database so it doesn't keep getting out there to employers and landlords and others. Section 3 is related to housing expungement. I'm not at all an expert in this area, but I'll just read the Senate Council summary of this. Section 3 amends the eviction law to explicitly give the court authority to expunge records relating to the action at the time judgment is entered, or after that time in cases where the defendant prevailed. The effect of this amendment is to allow the defendant to move for an expungement as part of the eviction proceeding, rather than bringing a separate petition or motion under Section 484.014, which is the general law governing expungement of eviction records. Section 4 amends the current law for statutory expungements. And this is where we get into expanding some of the remedies here that the Supreme Court recently made clear that if you all do not give them authority, the court's authority, to seal these executive branch records, then they won't do so. Currently, under the statute, some drug crimes can be expunged through the statute, which means both judicial and executive branch records. Those are typically first-time, lowest-level drug crimes. Additionally, under the current statute, if a juvenile has been certified as an adult, that qualifies for expungement. And also, if a case was resolved in somebody's favor, that qualifies for expungement. The way the courts have interpreted that resolved in favor language is the person could not have admitted to the facts of the case on the record. So the way that's played out is if somebody gets a stay of adjudication, which is a disposition that's often given in first-time offenses, they're told that if they successfully complete probation, they admit to the facts on the record, they will not have a conviction on the record. Adjudication will be stayed. What they sometimes hear the defendant is, oh, I won't have a record. Well, actually, that's a public record. So they still have problems with that when they're trying to get housing or employment. But the court has said in their case law that doesn't qualify under the resolved in favor of language. Neither do some counties' diversion programs if the person was required to admit to the facts on the record. So one change that this bill makes is to allow for those stays of adjudication and diversion programs to be sealed with a one-year waiting period after completion of sentence if the person remains crime-free. That's one of the three categories that have been added here. The second category is if somebody was convicted of or received a stayed sentence for a petty misdemeanor, or gross misdemeanor, and has not been convicted of a new crime for at least 3 years since discharge of the sentence. And then the third category is the petitioner was convicted of or received a stayed sentence for a felony violation of an offense listed in paragraph B and has not been convicted of a new crime for at least 5 years since discharge of the sentence. That paragraph B is the long list of felony level offenses starting at line 3.14. One way to think about that list, and this is how it was worded in an earlier version of the bill, is those crimes listed are felony offenses that are at level 1 and 2 of the sentencing guidelines. The sentencing guidelines go from 1 to 8 or 9, I think. So they're the lowest level felony offenses. None of them are listed as crimes of violence, so the crimes of violence listed in statute were pulled from that list, with the exception of some drug crimes. So there are some drug crimes in the crimes of violence list. Some of those are in this list. Section 5 provides for expungement without the filing of a petition in certain cases where the prosecutor agrees to the sealing, unless the court determines that it's not in the interest of public safety. The prosecutor also needs to make an effort to notify victims. And it would apply to the expungements that have been that are in the new statute. The nice thing about this is it still provides the checks on whether somebody could get a record sealed or not. But currently, even for somebody who's been charged with an offense, they have to file a petition that has a filing fee, and then it has to be served on multiple parties, and then they have to wait 2 months, and then they have to appear for a court hearing and wait another 2 months. This would allow that to be an administrative process if the prosecutor agrees, and it would save, I would think it would save the court's time and money and prosecutor's time and money as well. Section 6 amends the law governing the standards for granting an expungement. The current law is that if somebody petitions for an expungement under the statute, they have to show by clear and convincing evidence that they have a need for the expungement and that they're deserving of the expungement. That outweighs the burden on the state of sealing those records. That standard stays the same, so you know these waiting periods that are created for some of these records that are added still requires, after that waiting period, for somebody to prove that they should get the expungement through clear and convincing evidence. What this also does is it adds a long list of specific things that the court shall consider. There were folks that wanted to make that a little more clear as far as what they should consider, and there's a pretty long list there that provides some more clarity around that. Section 7 amends the law governing access to expunged records. New language allows the exchange of expunged records between criminal justice agencies, similar to the current authority for the exchangement of law enforcement data under statute Section 13.82. This replaces and expands current law. Current law authorizes opening an expunged record for a criminal investigation, prosecution, or sentencing, but requires an ex parte court order. This change removes that requirement for an ex parte court order so that criminal justice agencies could exchange the information. That would also allow, my understanding from Senate counsel is that would also allow those records to be used for enhancement purposes and criminal history purposes. That question has come up. None of this bill would change the ability to use records for enhancement or criminal history. Now, under current law, if law enforcement, prosecution, or corrections authorities request access to a record subject to an expungement order, they must be informed of the existence of the record and the right to obtain access to it with a court order. The language is modified, consistent with the new provision allowing the exchange of expunged records, to require an agency or jurisdiction subject to an order of expungement to maintain the record in a manner that provides access by those criminal justice agencies, but informs them the record's sealed. If a request is made by the Commissioner of Human Services, the Commissioner must be notified of the existence of the record and of the right to obtain access to it. Now, there was some confusion about this in the working group meeting. Currently, if the Commissioner of Human Services, if a record had been sealed before they did a background study, they may not, they're not getting notice of that. This would make it clear that they would get notice of it. And then language is added explicitly stating that an expunged record remains subject to the expungement order in the hands of the person receiving it. That's to kind of protect that data still. So when criminal justice agencies are using it, it has a protected classification. They can still use it for investigation and prosecution and sentencing. And then finally, Section 8 expands the current requirements related to distribution of expungement orders to require court administrators to notify petitioners of the entities that receive the order and to require those entities to send a letter to the petitioner confirming the record is expunged. Sometimes it's been found that sometimes those records don't get properly sealed. And this way, if somebody doesn't get the record, this letter saying the record been sealed by an agency, they could check into that and make sure it gets sealed.
Questions from members for Mr. Hazy? We have a number of folks from the audience that would like to testify. So if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill, please come forward, state your name for the record. And members, while you were, while folks come down, while you were coming in, after speaking with Representative Druskowski, there are some amendments that didn't meet the 24-hour rule, but that I believe that there can be some agreement around. And so it's currently being drafted, and if we can actually get it drafted and get it distributed and members can take a look at it, we may just waive that 24-hour rule. If not, we'll just be laying this bill over, and then we'll be bringing up the amendments at the next hearing and voting on it. Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear at some point from the County Attorneys Association here.
Yes.
But he's got kind of a squishy letter here. I mean, it's not really definitive. It says that they support the concepts, appreciate the efforts, they provide a good balance, but they don't say if they endorse it or not. I'd like to hear a yes or no if they endorse the bill or not.
They'll come down, Representative Cornish. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Brandon Mulners. Thank you for having me today. I'm a community specialist at the YMCA in Northeast Minneapolis. I work in partnership with Hennepin County Probation to provide direct case management to a caseload of 20 clients that are on probation until age 21. Every day, I see barriers a youth faces because of the juvenile felony record. Youth who have the desire to seek employment are consistently denied the right to work because of their record. Youth who have the capability to live in their own apartment are turned away because of their juvenile records. All of my youth have faced these barriers, and it becomes discouraging for youth to stay positive during these experiences. Josh is a client of mine who has came here today, who is on probation and has a felony record. Josh is a voice for hundreds of youth in Hennepin County who deserve a second chance. Josh's chances of individual success will be greatly impacted if the expungement reform bill is passed. Josh has a bright future ahead of him. He is following all conditions of his probation. He is working over 50 hours a week, and he will begin college in the summer with a dream of being a biomedical engineer.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Molly.
The young man, Josh, that he was just talking about is here and would like to testify. And I know that it's the protocol in committee that we have testifiers say their first and last name on the record. Josh is hesitant to say his last name on the record because of the collateral consequences that could be involved in just the fact that we're live streaming this hearing right now, and the sort of recording of this hearing could be maintained indefinitely. And what he's afraid of is that he could suffer some collateral consequences because of that alone. And so although it's normally protocol, I'm wondering if the chair would allow him to testify with keeping his identity to only his first name.
Representative Moline, I will consult with other members on the committee. It has been my practice to not permit anyone to testify without giving their full name, because typically when people give their name, they have to be responsible with what they say. But I'll consult with members of the committee. We'll take testimony from others, and then if Josh is able to testify, we'll let you know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is John Kingry, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss this bill. And thank you to the author for bringing it forward and for listening and addressing a number of our concerns. I went back and looked at our position paper, and the first time we took a position on this was in 2006. But I know the debate started before then. And I think if I have one message for folks this year, is we would like to move forward with an expungement bill. We would like to provide the relief that these individuals are seeking. We do recognize that criminal records do provide an important aspect for investigations and prosecution. And this bill protects our ability to access and to use those records. With regard to supporting the concept, I did review the bill with our executive committee in detail on Monday, and because it was still a work in progress, they agreed that the elements in this bill are consistent with the position paper, again, that we've had since 2006 and was amended in 2007. On that conference call was Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Tammy McConkie. She's been very involved in the discussions on this bill, along with an Assistant Dakota County Attorney. And it's still a work in progress, and we've been working with the authors. I think the final few suggestions we may have will not do damage to the bill, and pledge to work with the authors and all of you to make sure that something moves forward. And with that, Tammy might want to make some comments.
Madam Speaker and members of the committee, I'm Tammy McConkie, and I'm an Assistant Ramsey County Attorney. And if I can just say I'm honored to be here. I've never testified before the legislature. But we very much value the work that has gone into this bill. We realize that it's an important value that people not suffer or be punished forever for the offenses that they made. And we also realize that in terms of public safety, people do better when they go out in the world and they have a stable and safe place to live and a meaningful job. They're less likely to reoffend, and we get that and we appreciate that. So in looking at this bill, there are many aspects about it that we do appreciate. We appreciate that there are different levels of waiting time for different severities of offenses. We appreciate the lists in the bill, and we appreciate the concept that we're working toward, that we be able to have access and use the expunged records in our work as law enforcement and prosecutors. When we do our work, we are often under a very strict time clock. If a defendant is in custody, we have a matter of hours before law enforcement needs to finish their investigation. We as prosecutors need to review all of their reports, decide if there's enough evidence to charge a crime, and then if there is, prepare a complaint and get it filed. And so having immediate access without needing to get an ex parte order allows us to do that work in a timely fashion and in a more thorough fashion. When we're reviewing police reports, we need to know things like, is this an offense that can be enhanced because of a prior conviction? Is this an offense that would have a mandatory minimum because of a prior conviction? And then once a complaint is filed, we need to take different things into consideration, like, is this defendant somebody who would be eligible for a diversion program? If they've been through a diversion program before, they probably are not eligible for a second time. So those are important things that we need to know as we initially start up a case. We need to make bail recommendations. We need to argue for different release conditions. All of that in the criminal justice system hinges upon an understanding of a person's criminal behavior in the past. And so in order to be able to do that successfully, we need to have that information at our fingertips. Then as we proceed to trial, we need to know that information for purposes of understanding the history of a relationship between parties. We need to have it for rules of court, which require both defense attorneys and prosecutors to disclose the criminal history of any witness that they intend to call at trial. If a prosecutor fails to do that, that can be a Brady violation with serious consequences for us. So we do need to have that information for those purposes. And I thank you for your interest and your attention.
Questions from members? Next testifier. You wish to testify for or against the bill? Please come forward, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Caroline Palmer. I'm the Law and Policy Manager at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And I just have a brief comment I want to raise about the bill. Overall, we're supportive of the concept of expungement, but the one issue I want to raise is about misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, and petty misdemeanors in this bill. They are all treated the same. When you go through and start to look at the different types of statutes we're talking about, one that really, of course, stands out to us is criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree. It's a gross misdemeanor. And we think that that maybe could benefit from a longer period of time before somebody could come forward and ask for an expungement. There's a number of other crimes that we've started to go through and look at, and we're really hoping to work with Representative Moline and the Council on Crime and Justice to address that.
Just for clarification, criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree, that's a registerable offense, is that correct?
If it's an underlying offense for another one, yes.
Any register offense is not expungible because of another statute.
Okay.
So we're happy to work on those issues. I just want to make it really clear that there's another statute that says you can't expunge any registerable offense.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify for or against the bill? Please come forward, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the interim director of the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing and president and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions. Some of you may also have known me as the executive director of Elam Transitional Housing for 30 years. We support this bill strongly. We believe very much as people of faith that we should treat others the way that we would want to be treated in the same situation, that people that have completed their their consequences for the issues that they have done, that we need to show mercy and forgiveness for them and let them move on with their lives and to get into housing. As a housing provider for over 40 years, I can tell you that one of the significant barriers that we have as far as people moving out of homelessness and people with very low incomes and getting into housing is this continued issue of criminal records following them for the rest of their lives and unlawful detainers and those issues. We are clearly spending an incredible amount of money in state dollars as well as federal dollars in sheltering people that do not need to be sheltered, that can afford housing but can't get into housing because of their criminal records, and this will help with that. That's also true as far as with jobs, although we've made some significant changes there as far as in the application process. It still is the possibility that people will not be able to get jobs because of criminal histories. As a small business owner myself and a homeowner, I'm also a person with a felony. And I do have a job. And I do have a home. And we do not have those same issues if we have money. So I strongly encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify for or against this bill? Please come forward, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. Joel Carlson here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice, not so much on the bill, but on the A140812 amendment. And the question that I have, and I didn't hear it in the testimony and just wanted to see as the bill moves forward, I don't think that there's a concern about the concept of the bill itself, but as it relates to the use of an expunged criminal record in a civil action, just want to talk about the timing of when that would be inadmissible. So if it is a record that the employer has prior to the hiring that is subsequently expunged, is that excluded when they knew about it before the hiring or the retention of the employee took place? It's just a question of timing that I have on how the wording of that amendment. It reads to me that, as it is currently worded, that the employer could have an expunged, the knowledge of the expunged record, still keep an employee in a dangerous position that could be harmful to customers or the public. And that when that harm subsequently happens, you wouldn't be able to use that as an element of your negligent hiring or retention case. And I don't think that's the intent. I think it's a record that you either couldn't get because it was expunged, or if you had it ahead of time, is that then also not able to be used as evidence in a civil trial? And again, that would only be in an instance where there is a case where they would have liability through negligent hiring or retention. And I think it's just a question of timing. I don't know. I just didn't hear it in the testimony. I wanted to at least put that concern on the record so that we can work on it.
Thank you. Questions from members? Is there anyone else? Representative Paymar. Okay. Anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill?
Hello, my name is David McGee. I'm a member of the community. I am in support of this bill. I believe this bill could be the difference between families being on the Minnesota Family Investment Program and being gainfully employed. This bill could be the difference between a person being homeless or having shelter. This is a very, very important bill, and I believe this bill should move forward and be passed because of those instances. I think that people do deserve a second chance, especially if they have been crime free for, you know, somehow, you know, 5+ years. They shouldn't be hindered, you know, in their future endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify for or against this bill, please come forward, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Katie Engler with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and I've been listening to the testimony about the access provision to the records by the criminal justice community, and I'm really here asking for a clarification. The 0813 amendment that was adopted says that the exchange language applies to records expunged on and after August 1st of 2014, but there's no mechanism left for sharing of records or access to records prior to August 1st, and I don't know if that's what you intended or not.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, I guess in essence that is what we intended. So right now, if somebody has an expunged record, either a judicial record or if the court did expunge beyond the judicial records, the executive branch records, an agency seeking that record would have to seek an ex parte order in order to get access to that record. Our bill changes that, and after the enactment date of this bill, if somebody had an expunged record, the county attorneys and law enforcement and corrections would be able to gain access to that bill without an ex parte court order. The reason we adopted the amendment to say that this only applies to records after the enactment date is because all those people that already have expunged records have certain protections in place. And it's their understanding that they have those protections in place. So I didn't feel it was fair to pass a law to then undo protections that people already have. And so that's why we changed that verbiage so that this only applies to records after the enactment date. And from my understanding, advocates are working with the BCA and others to see how this is workable with their computer system and the way that they keep records so that we can, you know, if this language particularly doesn't address how it would work, that we can work with them to figure out language that would work to have the same impact as intended.
Madam Chair, we're happy to work with advocates and the author to see if we can't figure out a way to make this work.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Did you have a question? Representative Paymer. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Representative Droskowski.
Madam Chair, is there anyone from corrections here?
I don't see anyone. It is going to public safety, and it will be going to civil law, at least. So,
this individual here. The question is...
Representative Droskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is, and I think Mr. Hazy was going to help us clear up some questions around the strikeout on lines 1.12 and 1.13 and how it relates to whether the person is in custody of corrections or the local jurisdiction. And if you could talk us through that and help us better understand, that'd be helpful.
Well, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Sure, thanks. My name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the director and legislative liaison for the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act counties. So I don't represent the Department of Corrections. That's why I was a little slow to come down. I wasn't sure what your question was going to be, Representative Droskowski. To that point, whether or not kids are in the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections is basically a local county decision. There are lots of kids at Red Wing. They get there one of two ways. One, they are placed there as a condition of probation. The other option is they are committed to the commissioner. The difference there is if they're placed by the county remains control of and the judge in terms of reviewing the case, determining when they've completed, when they can return from the facility. If they're committed to the commissioner, then the commissioner determines progress and when the kids are released. In those cases, again, it's local county process. In fiscal 2013, I think only 20 kids statewide were actually committed to the commissioner. Obviously, many, many more kids than that were placed at Red Wing, but the local counties chose the placement option rather than the commitment option. And again, that's local correctional practice. There are a handful of counties that it is their practice. If a kid goes to Red Wing, they commit them always. There are others that, you know, have gone a decade or more placing lots of kids down there but not committing a single one of them. And again, that's a local county decision for how they want that case to be determined, how they want the progress to be monitored, whose authority they want to have to monitor that. It's not a decision that's consistent among case types or offense types or risk or anything like that.
Representative Droskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Erdman, you're suggesting there's about 20 statewide then that are in that category that are actually committed to corrections in that situation?
Yes, that's great. There's a report on the DOC website. I think the average daily population in FY 2013 was 26, but there were 20 admits during the course of that calendar year, 20 commits. Under that model, out of 130 or some odd kids that are at Red Wing on any given day.
Representative Droskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Erdman.
Representative Paymer.
Thank you. This sort of when criminal justice agency, Representative Moline, what does that include? Is that on line 8.5. So that's county attorneys, law enforcement, corrections.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe House Counsel knows if it's defined somewhere else in statute. From my understanding, it included county attorneys, corrections, and law enforcement.
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, the on lines 8.5 to 8.7, the statute provides for a vague definition of what criminal justice agency means, which reads, means a court or government agency that performs the administration of criminal justice under statutory authority. It's not particularly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Paymer.
I was trying to find in the statute where, I'm sure it's here. I was under the impression that domestic abuse records, assault records, were to be made available to domestic abuse programs statewide at no cost to those agencies in order to monitor the criminal justice system, to monitor the offenders, et cetera, et cetera. So did they fall under this vague definition of criminal justice agency?
Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair and members, I'd have to check the statute to see, check the specific statute to see what authority they have and to see it. My educated guess is that they probably wouldn't, but depending on the language in that statute you're referring to, which I'm not familiar with, I'd have to confirm that.
And Representative Paymer, I think we'd be open to making sure that they fit in that category or put language on that would make it. It isn't the intent to have that information sealed. Originally in the bill, there were targeted misdemeanors were completely even taken out of the ability to be sealed at all. I think there's some debate about whether that should be in or out, and I think that will probably be a big topic of discussion in your committee on whether or not those targeted misdemeanors should be completely excluded from any of the sealing. Representative Paymer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess I'll need to do some more work on that and finding that out. But I guess, Madam Chair, that's the question that I told Mr. Hasse. I support the bill. I hope this is the year we can move forward with things. But I'm wondering. I see Mr. Carlson here, but the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women is not represented here, and I'm wondering if they have, you're not representing them today, or are you?
And Representative Paymer,
is that okay to ask?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Representative Paymer, I just wanted you to know that they actually someone came to the working group and actually brought a victim of domestic assault that came forward and said, we sometimes plead guilty to these kinds of offenses, and you've completely excluded us from having the ability to have our records expunged. And so I think that is one of the reasons why that targeted list kind of fell off, but I anticipate that debate of whether it should be in or out will continue. I prefer to have that targeted misdemeanor list keeping those expungements from happening in the bill, and it's currently out. Representative
Mr. Carlson, so has the coalition taken a position on the bill?
Madam Chair and Mr. Representative Carlson. Paymar, I have been involved in this issue on behalf of the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women, who I've long represented, and they haven't taken a formal position on this bill, but we've met with Senator Champion. We've talked through some of the issues related to domestic violence and expungements. We haven't reached an agreement yet on how that should best work for both the victim and the person seeking the expungement. There are situations, and I was at the hearing when a victim had a felony level arrest that could not be expunged, and I have been in additional conversations with her and her lawyer about how this law would work to their benefit. So I can't give you a definitive, yeah, we're ready to go with this, but we're watching it very closely and trying to work with Representative Champion, or Senator Champion, principally, who reached out to us to see what we could do. We're not at an agreement point yet, but we do think there are instances where it can happen. There are also instances that aren't addressed in the bill right now that we hope to have addressed as it relates to family law that aren't really considered. Do I still get the information if it's been expunged in a family law setting? So there are a number of nuanced issues that we're trying to work through. So I can't say we've given it our blessing, but we are actively engaged in it. And so I went to all the meetings this summer, Representative Paymar, and for most of the summer, in fact, all of the summer, and up until the last working group, expungements of domestic violence records were excluded from the bill completely. It's only been in the last couple of weeks where that issue has come to the forefront. So we're not coming to the game late. We were excluded from it throughout all of the discussion during the summer, and it's only been in the last couple of weeks where this issue has surfaced. So,
Representative
Paymar. Madam Chair, well, I would just ask you, just given the short time frame we have for bill deadline, that I would hope that the coalition would take a position, or as it moves through the process fairly quickly here.
Madam Chair and Representative Paymar, you can be assured that we will. We don't want to take a negative position on a bill right now because we want to see the process move forward, and we want to see where we get to on a final product.
Thank you.
Other questions from members? All right. Seeing no further questions from members, what's the status of an amendment? Ready? Are you ready? All right, so members, after having a conversation with Representative Drazkowski, these amendments do not meet the 24-hour deadline, but we think that we can come to some agreement on it. So two of the three amendments are currently drafted. So if we can have staff pass these out, give one, a copy to Representative Drazkowski so he can talk about what the amendments do while you're passing them out. And then we'll make the amendments available to staff as well. Now, members, our choices are we can adopt them, we can just talk about them, or we can, lay this bill over and vote on it on Tuesday. But if we can come to agreement, we think that it's always best to come to that agreement and keep the bill moving to meet the deadline. So if you want to give Representative Molina a copy of the amendment as well so she knows which one we're talking about. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just talking with staff here. The A4 amendment kind of relates to the question that I asked Mr. Erdman on lines 1.12 and 1.13. I don't know that we're real clear on this yet, and it might make more sense to have further discussions with the Department of Corrections and maybe address this issue or not address it in Representative Paymar's committee when it gets there, if that would be the will of the chair.
That would be fine. So Representative Drazkowski is talking about, he just asked the question relating to juveniles that are committed to the Commissioner of Corrections. Originally, there was some discussion about reinstating the stricken language from the proposal, but it's your intent to withdraw that amendment and talk about it in Representative Paymar's committee. Is that correct, Representative Drazkowski?
It is, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski withdraws the A4?
Correct.
The A4 amendment. So, Representative Drazkowski, you have the A2 amendment, I believe?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment, members, amends... on page 3, the number of years for the three different categories, it increases the first category from 1 year to 2 years, which is the diversion or stay of adjudication, and the increases from 3 years to 5 years the threshold for the petty misdemeanor, or gross misdemeanor, and the felonies from five. The felonies included in this bill from 5 years to 8 years for a threshold. So it increased the threshold, similar, Madam Chair, to the testimony that we heard earlier.
Representative Moline, do you have a position on this amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I think this is fine. We can make this work.
Questions from members? All right. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Staff is working on an additional amendment. Okay, good to go. All right. Pass these out. Give a copy to Representative Draskowski so he can start talking about his amendment. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are this amendment would remove from the bill a handful of the felonies that are crimes specifically against people, and I don't have my list of those here. Maybe Mr. Debo could help us with those. Thank you. I'll outline those, Madam Chair. They include, and I don't know that they're in this order, 152.027, subdivision 6, paragraph C, the sale of synthetic cannabinoids, the accident resulting in death, the felony contempt, deprivation of custodial or parental rights, non-support of spouse or child, prostitution crime in a school or park zone, fleeing a police officer, aiding offender to avoid arrest, identity theft, receiving stolen goods, furnishing a dangerous weapon, and removing or altering serial number on a firearm. Those are the ones that it would remove from the bill, Madam Chair.
Representative Moline, do you have a position on the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Draskowski, I was sort of trying to follow along. I don't have the list in front of me either, but I did take a look at it earlier when it was sent to me. So I think I would be fine with adopting this amendment.
Questions from members? All right. All those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, there's one last amendment, the Fourth Amendment. We don't have copies yet. What is it? Do you want to talk about what it does, Representative Draskowski?
I will, Madam Chair. Thank you. When we do see the amendment, members, the intention is for it to not allow criminal justice agencies to see expunged records of people who were adjudicated as not guilty, so dismissals or acquittals, and without a court order. So it would require the current court order, it would maintain that treatment of those records, as I understand it, Madam Chair.
I think there's someone in the audience who wishes to testify on that proposal. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on that particular part? Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tammy McConkie, Assistant Ramsey County Attorney. And I think that for a variety of reasons, we would oppose an amendment like that, or at least want to look at the language and have time to look at it more carefully. Anytime we need to get an ex parte order slows down our process, and if we have a process where sometimes we need one and sometimes we don't, it becomes even more confusing and troubling at times when we're in a big hurry and are trying to get things done. I'll leave it at that. So, thank you.
Is there anyone else who wanted to speak to this issue? Sure. Representative Draskowski actually has a question. Go ahead, Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McConkie, as I understand it, what this amendment would do is just simply maintain current law for those particular situations. Is that correct?
Does
Yes, Madam Chairman and Representative Drukowski, what is happening here is that the number of cases that can be expunged is expanding tremendously. So I think it's necessary to look at this not just in terms of comparing it to what the law is at the present time, but what it will be and what it will be mean for prosecuting authorities and law enforcement agencies as we do our work. So,
if I could ask, what do you do with records when someone's been found not guilty? So that's what he's talking about. Somebody's gone to trial and been found not guilty. So what would you use those records for, Ms. McGinty? McGaki, sorry.
That's okay. What would we use them for?
Mm-hmm.
We would have them available unless the person made a motion to expunge the records. We may use them to see if that person during the records that we have was using a firearm, whether there were other incidents of violence, whether there are other levels of proof that are not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. A not guilty conviction means there was not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So in some other matters where there's a lower threshold of proof, arguably we could use them for those.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Ms. McConkey, you mentioned you were concerned about the time and energy and maybe money that the court would incur here, is what I think I heard. If there was, I have a bill that would actually allow these situations that where the complaint was either dismissed or acquitted to actually simply destroy the records. Would that make the time commitment and effort among the judiciary easier?
Ms. McConkey.
Madam Chairman, Representative Drukowski, I'd have to think about that, but I don't know that it necessarily would. There is time involved in destroying records. It would mean a separate category of things need to be done with records, so you'd still have that decision-making tree of are these records sealed, are these records destroyed, and it's still something that we would not be comfortable with because we would then certainly not have any access to it. And I would point out that the statute as it has been written in the past and as it has been proposed makes it very clear that records should be sealed, but they should not be destroyed, nor should they be made available to the person who is the subject of the records.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Ms.
Other
thank you, Madam Chair.
From members. Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair, I kind of like the amendment, and I wasn't completely clear. Is it just you're worried about expansion, but all the amendment of Representative Drazkowski does is continue current procedure? But you're worried about how that would expand. Is that true?
Ms. McConkey.
Madam Chairman, Representative, that's part, I guess I haven't thought through all of it, but for right now, that would be the immediate objection that comes to mind, is that we anticipate that once this bill is passed, there will be many, many, many motions for expungement. Not that that's a bad thing necessarily, but in managing them then and in making sure our records are kept the way they should be, yes, that would make it more complicated and a concern.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cornish.
Well, my follow-up would be, I believe that's what I like about the bill, that does greatly expand expungement, and that if this just, you're talking about a separate problem. I don't like to manage that problem with defeating his amendment. So I like his amendment, and I like the purpose of the bill. Representative Moline, I like your bill. I like your bill. I was just
thank
hoping
you
that
Cornish.
You could accept the amendment so that I could vote for it. So who knows what's going to happen in the Senate, but these amendments make it more palatable for us to vote for it. So,
Representative Moline, any comments about the amendment and your thoughts on it or your commitment to continue to work on the issue? Or,
Madam Chair, I think maybe Mr. Franklin wanted to be heard on the amendment as well.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chairman, members, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for the Sheriff's Association. I'll try not to be redundant. We express concern over this. Again, our membership has not been able to have an opportunity to look at this, so we want to continue to work on the bill. We think we've made a lot of progress coming along thus far, and we want to continue. But as membership, we want to have not had an opportunity to look at it. There is some cost to local units of government. The BCA has already expressed concern about it. We expressed local concerns about what this is going to cost us at the local level to deal with some of this. And we have a double-edged sword as a law enforcement agency. We tend to gather evidence to prove that people are guilty. At the same token, we want to prove that people are not guilty. We want to make sure that rumors and other kinds of things in the community are adjusted correctly, especially when somebody is exonerated, found not guilty. Or we have the cases where, for lack of evidence or lack of cooperation from victims, people won't testify. We cannot move forward on the case, and then having to go back and again try to get that evidence and that information to move forward on potentially future criminal complaints. So we want to study this more. We want to work on it some more. But I just raise a few concerns with regards to the amendment.
Representative Moline, it's my understanding that the amendment is not drafted properly. It won't be ready. And so potentially we could keep working on that particular issue as the bill continues to proceed through the process. If members are okay with that, if I have your commitment that you'll continue to talk with Representative Druskowski about his concern as well as the stakeholders. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to talk to Representative Druskowski. I happen to agree with him on this point. I mean, I think the issue is the stakeholders maybe we would have a disagreement with. So, but, you know, if we can look at the amendment once it is drafted and maybe the next committee stop, we can try to work something out with the stakeholders where they would be somewhat comfortable with it as well.
Any questions or concerns from members? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Moline, I want to thank you for all the work you've been doing on this. A little comment on and a little concern about what this Rakowski said about the Rakowski amendment. You mentioned the concern and need to go in files that the person was found not guilty and looking at them and using them for an enhancement purposes and maybe finding other possible evidence. It's my understanding that if you're found not guilty, you're not guilty. And by bringing that up again, is that not double jeopardy? Finding the person guilty again after they've been found not guilty in court. Now, with the dismissals for lack of evidence or lack of witnesses, I don't know, those cases I could understand, but if a person has been found not guilty by the courts, as far as I'm concerned, it should be over with, and they should not even be, if they've been expunged, they should not even be able to look at it at all.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson. Jeopardy attaches when a jury is impaneled, but I think that your concerns are well-founded, that if, in fact, if from the perspective of law enforcement or prosecutor, I can't get you on this one, I'm gonna get you the next one. If you're looking at technical jeopardy, it doesn't attach until we actually bring you before the court and we impanel a jury, and then we can't do it again. But all the rest of the stuff is left out there. So, but it could potentially fly in the face of what you're saying, that you're either guilty or you're not. But under the current regime, you were either guilty or not until we find all the stuff we can against you, and then you're guilty. So I see what you're saying and agree with you somewhat.
Other questions from members? All right. Seeing none, Representative Moline, it's my understanding that civil law can actually see the proposal sooner. So if you would, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to thank the author for bringing this bill forward and working with the minority on it. And I think we have a better bill now than where it was before, and hopefully we'll have a good product in the end. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Representative Moline.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I won't take much more of the committee's time, but I want to thank everyone else that worked on this bill. It was really a long process, and it's obviously, we know now that it's going to be a continuing process, but we had a lot of really great members on the expungement working group that were very active in making sure that we had a good bill come out of there. So we're going to continue to work with all stakeholders going forward, but a lot of work has gone into this. You know, the fact that we were able to adopt some amendments from Representative Drazkowski and the Chamber of Commerce and the county attorneys essentially took a neutral position on one of my bills is kind of a big deal for me. So so I just want to thank everybody for the work that they put into this, including all the stakeholders, and hopefully we can improve it even more going forward.
Thank you, Representative Moline. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, this meeting is adjourned.